Canada, and hockey fans in the United States and Newfoundland. As the great Foster Hewitt once said, and as we've gone over before on this show, you just heard the Hockey Night in Canada theme again for the second week in a row, so I definitely wanted to, you know, say those words because I'm ready to talk about some hockey. And like I've said before, I just love that intro because it's the best way to start any hockey show, in my opinion. And the subject of this week's book would agree after listening to those words on his own family radio back in the 1940s from the on the Hockey Night in Canada broadcast. Still, it just never ceases to amaze me how many people to this day associate those words by Hewitt as something that's just really inspiring to hockey fans. I've seen it referenced in so many books so far, I've just really lost count. It just gets me ready to watch hockey whenever I hear it. Well, in this case, ready to talk about it. So here we go. As you well know, you've tuned into From the Point, and I'm your host, Danny Lambert. As always, this week, we've got another great hockey book lined up to take a look at, as we always do on this show. And if you've been tuning into the show regularly, you know we're in the middle of our month-long celebration of Black History Month, as we highlight the accomplishment of Black pioneers in the sport of hockey. Last week, we took a look at the life and playing career of Herb Carnegie in our review of A Fly in a Pail of Milk. And it's the end of Carnegie's road that I want to start to pick up the story that we're going to go over this week. As you remember from last week's episode, Herb retired from hockey after playing for Owen Sound in 1953-54 in the Ontario Senior League. Carnegie had the chance at the NHL, but he didn't quite make it for reasons that we went over last week. And it looked like at the time of his retirement in 1954, there might not be another black hockey player who could break the color barrier anytime soon. But that's funny how fate works in that regard. Because in 1954, a young man from New Brunswick by the name of Willie O'Ree started his journey to the NHL by lacing up his skates for the Quebec Frontenacs of the Quebec Provincial Junior Hockey League. Willie was a strong, fast skater. He used his speed to create a lot of scoring, and he did that season for the Frontenacs, notching 44 points in 43 games. After that, he moved to Kitchener in the OHA, putting up even better numbers, 58 points in 41 games. And it was obvious that at age 20, Willie O'Ree was a legit NHL prospect. Still, in the summer of 1956, after his season in Kitchener, Willie O'Ree didn't get any invites to an NHL training camp for a tryout. And it was really for one reason. Willie O'Ree was black. Still, luckily for the world, Willie didn't let that stop him. He decided to keep at it and let his talents convince everyone that the color of his skin had nothing to do with how good he could play hockey, much like Herb Carnegie had set out to do just over a decade earlier. And like Carnegie, O'Ree would find himself on the Quebec Aces, working hard to show the hockey world that his rightful place was in the NHL. And also, just like Carnegie, Willie would find himself being invited to try out for an NHL club. And once again, like Carnegie, Willie would leave that camp with no contract and was back in the Quebec Senior League waiting for a call. But unlike Carnegie, Willie ended up getting that call. The story of Willie O'Ree is one of the greatest in all of sports, and especially hockey. His perseverance in the face of racism and his positive attitude while doing it makes him one of the true gentlemen and heroes of the sport. His story has been told, sure, many times, but until last fall, it's never been completely told by the man himself. The book Willie, The Game-Changing Story of the NHL's First Black Player by Willie O'Ree and Michael McKinley, is a long overdue complete telling of Willie's life struggles and triumphs that I'm very excited to say is the subject of this week's episode. So without further delay, let's talk more about Willie as the warm-up is officially on after this.
Mr. O'Ree's hockey career started in the 1950s, breaking the color barrier on January 18, 1958, becoming the first black player in the NHL as a member of the Boston Bruins. Mr. O'Ree was also a member of the San Diego Gulls from 1967 to 74, scoring 153 goals, 161 assists for a total of 314 points in 407 career games. His number 20 jersey currently hangs in the rafters in San Diego to honor his achievements. As the NHL's Hockey is for Everyone ambassador, and part of the Ducks SCORE program. Mr. O'Ree is actively involved in school assembly programs, helping to grow the sport of hockey through face-to-face student interaction, highlighting topics such as breaking barriers in sports and California hockey history. Joining Willie on the ice for tonight's honorary puck drop are Boston Bruins captain Zdeno Chara and Anaheim Ducks captain Ryan Getzlaf. Thank you. And let's hear it for a living legend, Willie O'Ree.
So that was from the PA call when Willie dropped the puck, ceremonial first puck in a game between Boston and Anaheim. It was just a good thing for me, and I wanted to play it. I know it dragged on a little there at the end, but I wanted to play it just because it's a good summary of his career and kind of quickly what he's done. And just give you a preview kind of where we're going to go with the discussion today, because that's what Willie did. But we've got a lot more to drill down and a lot more to talk about. So welcome to the warm-up, and if you've been paying attention lately, you've probably heard about Willie O'Ree and the current events of hockey. It was announced on 12 January that the Boston Bruins will be retiring O'Ree's number 22 to the rafters at TD Garden, what was supposed to be this Thursday. It should be a great display of honor for Willie, and one that is very long overdue, and I'm looking forward to watching it, but it looks like I'm going to have to wait a year as well as the rest of the hockey world, as it was announced a few days ago that the Bruins would wait till next season in order to have some fans in the stands, which I think was the right call in the end. It would have been a little weird to have such a ceremonious thing happen in a largely empty TD Garden. So we're hoping for the best next year. We know it's going to happen, but definitely a very cool honor for Willie and for the rest of the hockey world. But still, reading the story about it and behind this effort was Bruins CEO Charlie Jacobs, and he best describes why Willie was so deserving of this honor, saying, quote, "Throughout the history of the National Hockey League, there have been very few individuals that have had such a profound impact on the league and its culture than Willie O'Ree. After breaking the color barrier as a Boston Bruin in 1958 and eventually retiring from professional hockey in 1979, Willie became the ultimate ambassador for improving diversity and inclusion within the game of hockey. The entire hockey world is forever indebted to Willie for all that he has done and continues to do for the sport. We are incredibly proud to retire Willie's number and cement his legacy as one of Boston's greatest athletes." I think to some, it's been easy to dismiss Willie's place in history because he's only played 46 NHL games and parts of two seasons with the Bruins. But to do that is absolutely missing the point of Willie's accomplishments on and off the ice and after his playing career. The things that he's done have been massive. As Jacobs clues into with his words, Willie was an ambassador and has done so much for diversity in the ranks of hockey. And I also really think it's like he said, it's very important to make sure that Willie is cemented on the list of most impactful Bruins, and for that matter, sports stars in Boston history, because it's very germane and very important to the thread that is the Bruins to include the legend of Willie O'Ree. And so this way, by retiring as number 22, people will definitely know that for sure. His induction into the Hockey Hall of Fame in 2018 was a big step towards ensuring Willie's legacy is lasting, but this gesture by the Bruins, to me, is a further reinforcing of that legacy. I mean, how better to show fans that what Willie meant and means to the Bruins and to the NHL by putting his name on display in the Garden for all to see next to great players like Willie's teammate Johnny Busick or even the great Boston Bruin Bobby Orr. His number's going to be up there in the rafters right next to him, which is really cool. Really cool when you think about it. For me, though, after reading Willie's story in this book, I got to say Willie O'Ree is a great person as well as a great hockey player. His stories in the book always seem to have some kind of positive spin to them as Willie communicates to the reader his wonderful sense of optimism even in the face of the challenges that presented themselves. Sure, he talks about the racism he encountered in playing and in life, for that matter. But to me, it was just how he spun it, how he talks about it now. Sure, he doesn't pull any punches in describing what happened, but you can tell that Willie was and never is one to dwell on it, as he seeks to show the reader that his life was a good one, that he feels was well-lived and that people can learn from, and that he really just wants to make sure that everybody stays positive about. But make no mistake from my last statements, Willie O. Ree encountered some racism in his life, and it affected him. But luckily for us, it affected him in the right way, as motivation to push further and harder towards his goal of playing in the NHL, and for that matter, in life beyond the game. It was that perseverance and along with a change in society that really let Willie O. Ree, allow Willie O. Ree to break in the NHL's color barrier in 1958, even after some had gotten so close before him but never quite did. So as we look to start the discussion on Willie and his impact on the game of hockey, I'd like to start at his beginnings in New Brunswick, and more importantly, and more specifically, the setbacks and the opportunities that led to his NHL debut and NHL career. There's a lot to the story, and you'd be surprised that one of Willie's biggest challenges was something that was not even because of his race. We'll get to that and so much more in the first period after this.
You're a Canadian kid, right?
Yes, I am.
And Canadian kids skate before they walk. Is that true?
Well, I believe so, yeah.
How old were you?
I was three when I started skating, and I started playing hockey at the age of five.
Okay, so when did you say to yourself, I'm pretty good at this. Maybe I'm even better than the other kids, and I may someday be able to be a pro. When did you say that?
14.
14 years old?
14 years old. I decided I wanted to become a professional hockey player and hopefully one day not only play pro but play in the NHL.
Now, when you were 14, did you know there were no blacks in the NHL?
I knew that there were no blacks. I knew that there were blacks playing in other leagues, but none had the opportunity to get into the league at that time.
So didn't you hear what all the stories? Hey, you may be a great player, but the color of your skin means you're not playing in that league. Forget about it. Do something else. Didn't you hear that?
I heard it, but it went in one ear and out the other with me. Once I decided I wanted to become a professional hockey player, and thanks to my older brother, who was not only my brother and my friend, but he was my mentor, and he taught me a lot of things that I'd need to know. And when he found out that I really wanted to play professional hockey and hopefully one day get into the National Hockey League, then we just took the steps, and I just worked hard. When I was 17, I left my hometown to go up to Quebec, Canada, and play my first year junior.
That interview segment that Willie did describing his childhood and getting into hockey is definitely a perfect way to start this first period out, because that's what we're going to talk about mostly to start out, just how Willie got started, what his inspirations were, how he got to the NHL. So I really liked that interview clip, and I hope you did as well. I think one of the bigger things is, and it's a theme in the book too, that you took away from that too, is just how much Willie appreciated and loved his brother. His brother was a big, big impact on him, and he definitely talks about that in the book, and we'll talk a little bit about that, but when I listened to that, I definitely took that away too. But most of all, I took away one thing that you're going to continue to take away here. Willie O. Ree is just a heck of a positive person, and it was it's really fun to listen to his story. So starting out the first period, I just want to say that we're going to start at the beginning. And Willie's love, like he talked about in the interview, for hockey started at an early age, like many Canadian children. To be exact, he started skating at the age of three and began playing organized hockey at the age of five. He spent a lot of time on a frozen backyard rink learning the game from his older brother Richard, and recalls in his book that his race had little to do with things in those early years. Quote, "The fact that I was black never came up much when we were played as kids. You could have been purple with a green stripe down the middle of your forehead, and it wouldn't have mattered. It was only later when I became older that I learned what the color barrier really meant." O'Ree's family had come to Canada two generations earlier when his grandfather had escaped slavery in South Carolina through the Underground Railroad. Willie explains that while racism was what brought his family to New Brunswick, it was something that he needed not to think about on a daily basis. Sure, the O'Rees were only one of two black families in their town of Fredericton, who both lived on the same street, across the street from each other, as a matter of fact. But the issues of race really didn't really affect the O'Rees. It was just very little, and they were largely accepted in the community. Willie says that there were lines in Fredericton that did separate race, but it wasn't really aggressive and often not really well-defined, so it was best just to be mindful, for lack of a better term. He tells the story of one of his white friend's fathers who was a barber, and he just decided one day, with the father's acceptance, that he was going to go start to the white friend's father's barbershop and just start getting his hair cut there. And that's what happened. Willie got his hair cut by his friend's father, and that was it. He just started going there every time. And that was a line that was crossed, and nobody really batted an eye too much at it. So that's kind of what it was like for him growing up in New Brunswick. There were some things that seemed racial, but there wasn't really anything that was overtly racist, I guess is the best way to put it. But in hockey, Willie was a standout in the ranks of Fredericton hockey, even despite being kicked off his high school team for checking the coach's son in a scrimmage. From age 15 to 18, with a lot of mentorship from his brother, Willie became known as a speedy winger with strong skating and puck handling abilities. He played with the Fredericton Junior Capitals and then later bumped up and played on the senior level Capitals. He learned a lot about playing against older competition, and it certainly helped with his maturity and visibility to junior scouts. Like a lot of other players that you probably heard of, he definitely benefited from playing with older competition. It just helped him rise to a higher level earlier. Willie's youth days of hockey culminated with his signing with the Quebec Frontenacs to start his junior hockey career at age 19. In Quebec, Willie was a standout, posting 44 points in 43 games, as we had discussed before. And with the encouragement of his coach and former NHL star Phil Watson, Watson explained to Willie that in no uncertain terms, he was NHL material, and that made Willie just press harder towards that NHL dream, because he knew he could accomplish that. Because when you have a famous ex-NHLer and Stanley Cup winner like Watson telling you you can make it, I think you might want to listen to that. And that really helped him to bump up his play when he finally got to the next level, which was to move to the OHA to play with the Kitchener Canucks for the 1955-56 season. Willie describes his first season with the Canucks as one of those seasons that a player dreams about. He was 41 games into the 48-game OHA season and had tallied 30 goals, 28 assists for 58 total points, and was 10th in the OHA in scoring when something happened to him that will probably affected Willie more the most over the rest of his career and life. In that 41st game on November 22nd, 1955, against Kitchener's rival Guelph, Willie took a cross check from behind, and as he was falling forward, was struck on the right side of his face by a deflected slap shot. The result was a broken nose, broken right cheekbone, and the retina in his right eye was completely crushed. The doctor who examined him told Willie that he would not regain sight in his right eye and should quit hockey. But the doctor kept that information between him and Willie and did not share the information with the team, which ended up being very advantageous for Rory, because had it come out that he was blind in one eye, teams wouldn't have touched him ever again since then. He would have to quit. He spent the rest of that winter learning how to play with only one eye after the OHA season was over with. Willie was so worried about anyone finding out about his eye that he only shared his blindness with one of his sisters. Nobody else knew about it, just his one sister. That winter, though, he learned the skill of looking quickly over his shoulder to make up for the fact that his right eye was blind, and that would be massively important to him as he was a left winger at that point. He eventually got right with the technique, and he felt ready to head back to play hockey that next season. Still, it can't be understated that Willie's eye injury was a major life changer. As the pages of the book goes on, it becomes a constant theme as Willie navigated through the world of hockey with only one good eye. Also, it cannot be understated that he was always scared of somebody finding out about it to the point where it cannot be said enough that his blinded right eye was more of a concern to Willie than possibly some of the racism that he was encountering. That's not to say that racism wasn't present and an obstacle, but you can just tell from the words in the book that Willie was just as worried or much more about his eye than he did about the obstacles that race was playing in his rise towards the NHL. But that summer in 1956, Willie was thinking about his future and got another offer to possibly change the issues. He had been quite the baseball player and made a name for himself playing in New Brunswick. He also realized that his ability to play baseball was largely unaffected by his blinded eye. He got an offer by scouts of the Milwaukee Braves to head to their summer camp in Waycross, Georgia that summer. So Willie spent the summer there and encountered a lot of racism, of course, being Georgia in the 1950s. He now knew what it was like to be black in America in the 1950s, and he decided that he wanted no part of it. So when he was cut towards the end of camp, he was actually kind of happy. And it also helped him work, you know that he should go back home and still work towards his hockey dreams. But at least he gave baseball a shot, and he learned some valuable lessons about what some of the other black people in the United States were encountering at that time. Because, like we said, New Brunswick really wasn't a very racist place. But he definitely learned what it was like when he went down there, and that's definitely a strong part of the book. It's an entire chapter and one of the better and more interesting reads. Luckily for Willie, though, he did return to Brunswick late that summer, and he got an offer from a famous coach that would set in motion the realization of his NHL dreams. We'll get into that offer and Willie's time in the NHL coming up next in the second period.
During the early years of the Civil Rights Movement, the Boston Bruins made a player move that generated little attention at the time, but in retrospect, made hockey history. On January 18, 1958, Willie O'Ree skated under the ice of the hallowed Montreal Forum wearing a Bruins sweater. When he did, he became the first black man to play in an NHL game.
It must be quite an exciting thing, isn't it, to get into an NHL game for the Boston Bruins? What do you feel about it, Willie? Anything unusual?
No, it was the greatest thrill of my life, I believe. I'll always remember this day.
The fact the Bruins were the first team to integrate was really a nice highlight in the history of the Bruins that didn't necessarily result in a trophy being won, but was evidence of a team that did the right thing.
He was accepted very well. He was a player, and that was it. He was just treated the same way as anybody else.
I have a lot of respect for Willie. He went through a lot of tough times when he first came up, but he was able to accomplish what he wanted to.
Marie was looked to be the last one to touch it.
The element of that story that was not known at the time, which makes it even more remarkable, was the fact that Willie was legally blind in one eye and no one knew that, yet he was able to overcome that, as well as becoming the pioneer that he was, is really pretty amazing.
That was a clip from the NHL Centennial Celebration. They did quite a bit, and it just explaining what it was like, why it was so important, and some of the facts behind Willie's debut into the NHL. I really enjoyed that clip, and I think it's great. Once I always say this, but it is a great steam setter for what we're going to talk about this period, because we're going to get into his NHL career and just what that was like. So is that debut, we're going to talk about that, and then even talk a little bit about what it was like for him playing in the NHL after that as well. So that summer at home in Fredericton, Willie was pondering his future after his foray into baseball camp in Georgia. Then he was one day he was visiting his sister, as the story goes, and Willie got a visitor. The visitor was no other than the great coach Punch Imlach, who was still coaching the Quebec Aces. If you remember from last week's episode, Punch was the coach who brought in Herb Carnegie to the Aces. Imlach, who had coached Herb Carnegie and Jean Béliveau with the Aces and would go on to 4 Stanley Cup wins with the Maple Leafs, was looking to build a winner in Quebec and saw Willie as, quote, the kind of player we need. Sounds a lot like the pitch he gave to Carnegie, in my opinion. Imlach left Willie's sister's house with an agreement from O'Ree to have him play the upcoming season with the Aces. Much like Carnegie before him, Willie saw the Aces as a way to get enough visibility and playing time to get noticed by an NHL club. In Quebec, Willie also, like Carnegie, would put up solid numbers. A Blight, they were not as good as Carnegie's, but Willie was a solid scorer for the Aces. There's no doubt about that. But Carnegie, who had gone before him, it was gone from the Aces for about three solid seasons. And as Willie said, he and Béliveau's memories were still looming large in that dressing room when he showed up to Quebec for that first season. Still in Quebec, Willie, like Carnegie, encountered some barriers due to his race. As a matter of fact, it was at this point in the book that Willie decided to make his most substantial discussion on racism. He explains that he heard racial slurs as early as 12, but dealt with them, and they were mostly isolated, just kind of kid stuff, as he described. Willie explains that while in the Quebec League playing with the Aces, he encountered a lot of hate and vileness on the road in different cities. He talks about punching someone who tried to jump into the penalty box and getting drinks tossed on him and getting spit on. But he doesn't get too in-depth because I think, and he kind of explains it, that this did not really faze Willie. He says that he decided a long time before he started playing with the Aces that he was going on to play until he was no longer able to, and that he was not going to let ignorant people chase him out of hockey. He was going to show them, and show them he did. In the summer of 1957, while Willie was home working, he received a letter. It was from the Boston Bruins. It was an invitation to Bruins camp, signed by the great Lynn Patrick, asking him to attend that year's camp in Boston. And Willie was beside himself. He was ready to show an NHL squad what he could do. So, when Willie rolled into Boston, he didn't really know what to expect. He said he actually thought he might find racism like he did in Georgia, but he was pleasantly surprised at the environment and the city of Boston. On the ice, he said it was great, as the current Boston Bruins players treated him like a member of the team. And while the workouts were challenging, he was rising to the occasion. Willie was also just happy to be playing in Boston Garden and felt like he had arrived just by skating with the Bruins in that historic building. Still, at the end of camp, the Bruins decided that Willie needed more seasoning and decided to send him back to Quebec rather than have him start with the Bruins. Now, thinking about Herb Carnegie's experience with the Rangers, one might be tempted to think that this meant that the Bruins were not interested. But things were different, and the Aces had an agreement to act as a minor league feeder for the Bruins, so really heading back to Quebec really didn't mean what it meant when Herb Carnegie went back to the Quebec League at that point after attending Rangers camp. That season, Willie started with Quebec, but quickly got a call up, but it wasn't to the Bruins, it was to their AHL affiliate in Springfield, Massachusetts. Imlach had taken over the Indians in Springfield and decided to get Willie up to the A. He was there for six games, and then it happened. Due to injuries on the Bruins, as the bug had hit them very hard, they called Willie up in mid-January to play. He knew it was going to be a short stint, but nonetheless, he was getting called up. So, as it came to pass, on January 18, 1958, Willie O'Ree became the first black man to play in the NHL. Suiting up for the Bees against the rival Montreal Canadiens in the Montreal Forum. He did it in the presence of his parents, who had came in from New Brunswick, and Willie said the great Johnny Busick told him before the game, quote, "We've got your back, and just play your game. You're a Bruin now," unquote. And while it might have taken the press a day to catch up, it was clear that Willie was an NHLer and had made history. I'll tell you what, I'm just going to stop and be frank. Reading that quote from Busick, it just gives you chills. It's amazing. And I hope all of you felt that way when you heard that. Still, Willie would play another game back home two nights later in Boston, again against the Habs. This time, the Habs would be the victors. But Willie knew what it was like to be a Bruin at home in Boston when he said that was just a great feeling to actually play in Boston in a Boston Bruins sweater. After that game, in fact, that night, he was sent back down to the minors to finish his season in Quebec. Willie has nothing but good things to say and was not upset with the demotion, as he knew he'd be back in the NHL soon, and that was the goal. After finishing 1958 in the minors, Willie once again found himself and camped that summer with the Bruins. And once again, it went the same way with Willie playing a fairly strong hockey, but in the end being told by Lynn Patrick that he would be sent back to Quebec for more seasoning. Willie's season in Quebec was just as good as his first points-wise. The next season in 1959-60, the Aces folded and Willie moved into Kingston to play where he posted a very strong 46-point season. He still had not made it back to the NHL for over 2 years at the end of the 1960 season. It was that summer in 1960, Willie wondered if he'd ever make it back to the NHL. But as fate would have it, he would. For when December rolled around, he got a call from the Bees saying only to bring his skates and get down to Boston. He knew right away that meant something serious with lots of playing time ahead, and Willie would be up with the Bruins for the rest of the 1960-61 season. Willie would play 43 games that year, notching 4 goals and 10 assists. By all accounts, he played great, showing his excellent speed and doing the things he needed to do while playing on the third line for the Bruins. He got to battle with some of the greatest in the original Six era, and he made lasting friendships. At the end of the season, even though the Bruins didn't finish very well in the standings, Willie thought, and he was assured by Lynn Patrick, that he would be back with Boston full-time again next season. Then, as fate would have it, the Bruins traded Willie to the Canadiens that summer. He had to find out about it from a local Fredericton reporter who broke the news to him while he was at home in New Brunswick. He never got an explanation of the trade from either side, from the Canadiens or the Bruins. But through some research and by asking around, Willie thinks that the Bruins had found out about his blind right eye and traded him to kind of get something in return for him as opposed to nothing. And if that wasn't enough, getting traded to the Canadiens was not really a great thing in the early 1960s, according to Willie, as their lineup was stacked and there was virtually no way he could crack their NHL roster. They were just way too chock full of talent at that point. In the end, Willie was right. The Canadiens immediately assigned him to their EPHL affiliate in Hull, Ottawa. He received a letter from their GM, the great Sam Pollock, and it was that Willie was going to head back to the minors to play with Hull, Ottawa. He reported there and was determined to make it to the Canadiens eventually. He'd just have to work hard like he always did, and he thought he could do it. Little did he know at the time, he'd never make the Canadiens or make it back to the NHL at all. We're going to talk about that and the end of Willie's career and his life after hockey in the next frame. So stand by, the third period is up next.
His number 20 hangs here in the rafters of this famous arena, and to this day he still calls San Diego home. And of course, the reason why we're all here, the man to my right, Willie O'Ree, Hockey Hall of Famer.
He played 7 years in San Diego, where his jersey was retired on October 16, 2015. San Diego fans still embrace O'Ree and welcomed him back on November 16, 2018 for a special ceremony after his Hockey Hall of Fame induction.
I just want to say what an honor and a privilege for me to be here this evening. I've been a San Diego Gull since back when I first came in 1967. And I still think that the finest fans I've had to play for are the ones right here in San Diego. So God bless you. I love you.
The fact that he came to San Diego and he played for the Gulls makes it that much more special for us as fans. And it's something that we can appreciate as fans and really, you know, exude in our support for the team.
On December 9, 2018, the Anaheim Ducks honored Willie O'Ree during a pregame ceremony. Willie's work in the Ducks SCORE program and the NHL Diversity Initiative has made him a special member of the Ducks organization, helping grow the game of hockey in Southern California. Willie O'Ree is a living legend, inspiring us all to do our best.
So what you're hearing there is a segment that they did before talking about the game that Willie had come back to San Diego after his Hockey Hall of Fame induction. And as you kind of noticed, and what I liked about it is it explains what his legacy in San Diego was like, because that's where he spent the end of his hockey career, was in San Diego. And that's where he calls home today. So I really thought that was germane and important to start this period off with. And we're going to talk about that road and what it took to for Willie to end up in Southern California. So let's get to it here in the third period. So Willie reported to Hull, Ottawa for the 1961-62 season, ready to get back to the NHL, and was motivated by the familiar surroundings that he found there. He had played there for 16 games the season previous before being called up to the Bruins and felt comfortable and ready to get to work. He was only 12 games into the new regular season when he showed up for practice and was called to Sam Pollock's office one morning. Willie thought it was he was going to be called up to Montreal, because that's usually what it meant if you're going to go see the general manager at that point, but it ended up being much different. Willie was traded again, and this time it was to the WHL, to the Los Angeles Blades. In LA, Willie really didn't know what to expect. He wasn't sure about Southern California and hockey, but he eventually knew he was in a great place. It wasn't the NHL, but he soon realized that he was playing in a great league, and he really liked LA. He played very well on the ice that first season in 61-62, notching 54 points in 54 games. And as a matter of fact, with the exception of one season out of six in LA, Willie was close to a point a game player. So he was still scoring at a great pace out in the WHL. In April of 1967, the Blades shut down, though, as the looming first NHL expansion would bring the expansion LA Kings into LA. Willie was not worried about the Blades shutdown, as he fully expected to get a call or a letter from one of the new or possibly old NHL franchises. Willie did get a call, but it wasn't from one of the other NHL franchises. It wasn't from one of the NHL franchises. It was from another WHL franchise in San Diego. Willie wasn't sure what he was going to do, because he was 32 at that point, and he was still holding out for the NHL. But in the end, he wanted to play, and he wasn't really ready to quit. So he signed with San Diego and spent part of eight seasons down playing for them. If Willie liked L.A., he really loved San Diego. He says he found a home there and was happy to be playing as one of the best players on the Gulls and was a respected sports figure in the San Diego community. Still, in the 1972-73 season, he had a personality clash with the Gulls coach and was sitting out to start that season. It was at this point that he was approached by an old friend who convinced him to sign with the New Haven Nighthawks in the AHL. New Haven was a feeder for the Islanders and North Stars at that point, but Willie knew he wasn't there as a prospect. He was there just to play. Still, he played really well, getting 45 points in 50 games. But Willie describes the issues he had playing on the road in the rinks of the southern U.S. in the early 1970s. He doesn't talk a lot about specific racist events in the book, but when he starts talking about this time in New Haven, he has a few crazy stories to tell. So when by the end of the season, with the Gulls wanting him back in San Diego for the WHL playoffs, and Willie tired of living that far away from home on the East Coast and being racially taunted, he went back to San Diego. In 1974, the Gulls and the WHL folded. Willie didn't want to leave San Diego again, so he played another season in the Pacific Southwest Hockey League for the San Diego Sharks. It's a lower league. And as Willie described it, it was rough and tumble. It was, quote, a circus. But in the end, he was ready to hang his skates up at the end of that season after only one year in the PSHL at the age of 41. In retirement, though, Willie was restless. He spent the next 3 years working in security, but he was longing for the rink. He decided to give it one more shot, so at the age of 43, Willie laced him up one more season in the 1978-79 season for the Pacific Hockey League's San Diego Hawks. He hadn't lost much of a step, as he notched 21 goals and 25 assists in the Hawks' 53 games played that season. Still, at the end of that season, despite showing he was still able to play, Willie hung up his skates for the last time and retired for good. His then-second wife was pregnant, and he was ready to be a father and a husband. Still, he describes the ending of this chapter of his life with that he had unfinished business in the world of hockey. So Willie would spend the next decade and a half working to build his security business in San Diego, and going and being an ambassador to the Gulls, who had started back up in a new league at that point. It was now 1996, and the NHL was looking to increase its diversity and really in the league and in hockey as a whole, and they came calling. They wanted Willie to get in on the ground level to help start the league's diversity program. O'Ree was now back in the NHL orbit, as he agreed quickly to help out, and started attending functions and events on diversity and becoming an inspiration for many. He found himself back, celebrated by the league after being largely ignored since he left the Bruins in 1961. It was magic, as if, you know, events, you know, as we can see in events in today's game and the increases of players of color overall in the demographics of the league today. Still, the league has a long way to go, but because they came back to Willie and because Willie has been so positive and wanting to make a positive change in the NHL diversity, the project, the NHL's diversity project, has really borne a lot of fruit for sure. And that's largely in thanks to Willie O'Ree and the league bringing Willie back into the fold. His work with the league also led to something that O'Ree thought could never happen: his induction into the Hockey Hall of Fame in November of 2018 in the Builders category. He blazed a path and then circled back around to clear it again. He certainly deserved to be honored for his courage on and off the ice. For me, the legacy of Willie O'Ree just kind of goes way past just being the first black player in the NHL. It's a few big things that I think of. One, he finished the work of Herb Carnegie and showed the doubters who kept him out of the league that black players could and should play in the NHL. Second, Willie was one of the most determined players I've ever seen. To overcome the blind right eye and still play at a high level that he did and continued to play professionally till the age of 43 is anything less than impressive. Absolutely astounding to me. Three, Willie's never asked for anything because of his accomplishments. I find it funny that when the NHL wanted to find him in 1996 to start the diversity program, that the diversity program's head, Bryant McBride, in the league office had to get some of his friends in the FBI to find Willie's address and phone number just to get in contact him. He was that off the radar and just really wanting to blend in and not really be a big deal. It was a good thing that the NHL finally made him a big deal, because Willie wasn't going to do it himself. And that humility to me really sticks out and adds to the legend of the man for sure. But more than that, most of all for me, I can't say enough how much Willie O'Ree's positivity inspires me to be better. Here it is, a guy who through sheer force of will accomplished his dream despite deep racism and then a huge physical disability on top of that. It's just another reminder that you can do just about anything if you believe in it and you want it bad enough. Never once in the pages of Willie's book did I read of O'Ree feeling sorry for himself or talk about giving up. As a matter of fact, he didn't give up until he was ready to give up. And I don't even think you can really call it a give up. He was just done on his terms. He played till he was 43, and I think he always thought he could make it back to the NHL right up until the day he decided that he no longer wanted to. To me, I won't say that he's so much more than just the first black man to play hockey in the NHL. I'll say this, as to ensure that the title is not minimized: Willie O'Ree is the first black hockey player to play in the NHL, showed courage and love for the game of hockey and life that we all see, admire, and strive to emulate. They just don't make them like Willie anymore, and you wonder if they ever will.
Now, when you came into the league, I mean, were you cognizant of Willie O'Ree and his contribution at that time?
I was. Yeah. When I started growing up in Toronto here, I wasn't that aware of it because it was pre-internet days.
Yeah.
They didn't know that information. Val James is my guy.
Yeah.
Grant Fuhr was my
guy. Remember Val James?
You know, all
tough
those guys, very tough. Yeah. Toronto Maple Leafs. Yeah. But I didn't really know about Willie O'Ree until I went to Michigan State University. I started doing my research. I got to the National Hockey League. I played in Boston, same place where Willie played. And I started learning more about Willie O'Ree and talking to him. And that's when I really fell in love with not only the story, but the man himself. I mean, what he was able to do and just continue that gospel and preach and talk and reach out to kids, girls, boys, doesn't matter what sexuality you are, and tell them about the great things about hockey.
Yeah.
It's been amazing.
Yeah, he has had such an impact in his role with the National Hockey League over the 20 years. I always say all the time, he should be in the Hall of Fame just for the fact he's reached so many people.
He has Hall of Fame miles, that's for sure.
That's right, he does.
He does. The way he's crisscrossed around the country.
Yep.
You know, you always hear about Wayne Gretzky and being important to, he's the catalyst with the expansion of hockey in the Southwest and the Sun Belt. And everyone keeps saying that Wayne's the sea, but I always say that Willie's the fertilizer and he's the water.
Yeah.
He's the one that helped the game grow. He reached
the
kids.
He was in the grassroots. He was out there
grinding,
at the rinks.
Grinding every single day. And that's nothing against Wayne because Gretz is a tremendous ambassador to our game, but he wasn't going back and forth logging thousands, millions of miles annually to spread the gospel of the National Hockey League. It was Willie.
So that was an interview with Anson Carter at Willie's induction ceremony just before it, talking with E.J. Hradec. And what I really liked about that is you look at a black hockey player who just describes what Willie meant to him. But what I also thought was kind of crazy was here it is. He really didn't know who Willie was because of just how kind of low key things were up to that point. But once he did, it just became an inspiring story for him. So I thought it was a real cool interview and just a good way to wrap things up. I'll just start the post game by saying this. It's a real bummer that we're not going to actually see Willie's number 22 retired till next season. What can you say but stupid COVID? Just seeing that banner previewed by the Bruins, though, is extremely cool. It's pretty much one of the last great steps the league, and now specifically the Bruins, have taken to make sure that Willie O'Ree is not just someone who is the answer to a trivia question, but a player who generations will see and ask, who is that? Why was he important? And it'll be even more important to explain to those kids and to the young players and to even anyone who asks just how important Willie O'Ree was and who he was. What I enjoyed most about this book was simply that Willie O'Ree pulls no punches about the racism he experienced in life. Still, that's not what this book is about. Willie makes sure to show the reader that while racism was a part of his story, it did not define his story or his life. He just wanted to play hockey. And it seemed to me that he only saw racism as an obstacle to where he wanted to go, to the, and that was to the NHL. And as we discussed earlier, Willie was so determined that nothing was going to stand in his way. And that was including the racism he encountered. Sure, I think Willie benefited from a better social climate than, say, Herb Carnegie did. But I even think that Carnegie would say that Willie had the drive that he had. It was just a perfect storm that led to his debut in January of 1958 at the Forum. But that storm should have raged on. But it didn't, and it really almost died. While there may have been a lot more black players in the ranks of the NHL, it always struck me that until the mid-1980s, the NHL had only seen about 7 or 8 more black players join their ranks after Willie had broken in. It took Willie O'Ree himself in 1996 to join back with the league to make sure that that storm regained strength and is now raging even more than he could have ever imagined. So you have to read Willie. It's important. It's too important of a hockey book to ignore. If you want to understand the history of diversity in the game and understand why there's a lot of work still yet to be done, you need to know Willie's story. Like I've said a million times, his is a good story, and you'll be better when you've read it. Also, it's an easy read. The pages fly by, and there's not too many of them also, which makes it also very easy. Finally, I'll say that like many of the books, I really like that this book offers really, you know, that I like. This book really offers about the right amount of detail for things. Not too much, not too little, just right. It really makes your understanding better and makes the book flow and pass by better. So get out there and get this book right now. If you're not into reading and you're the type that's listening to this podcast just to get a couple big cliff notes on a book, also make sure that you watch the documentary, because the book is fairly close to that. And even if you read the book, go back and read the watch the documentary as well. It's very cool. So I think that's all I can say for this week. And you're probably like, oh, thank goodness. For those of you who are repeat listeners, you probably said, yeah, he just did a little on the actual book, and that means the end. Sorry for being predictable. They say you should be predictable. That's the way I like to run my podcast. So, sorry. At any rate, thanks as always for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you like what you've heard, please give us a subscribe and a good rating on your favorite place for podcasts. It means a lot, and it helps me more than you'll ever know. So thanks in advance. Also, take a moment to look us up on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, as I share a ton of information about the subject of our book all during the week. It's fun, and you're missing out if you're not a follower, so find us out there on social media. I swear I'll make it worth your while. Finally, if you have a comment or suggestion, feel free to email the show at fromthepointpodcast16@gmail.com. So, looking ahead to next week, we'll be focusing on perhaps the most successful black player in the history of the NHL, Hall of Fame goaltender Grant Fuhr, as we examine his biography, Grant Fuhr, The Story of a Hockey Legend, by Grant Fuhr and Bruce Daumbigen. It should be a great one as we continue to honor the black pioneers of hockey during this Black History Month. Until then, thanks again for listening, and as always, stay classy, hockey fans.